You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way.
Hi, it's Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 126. And today I want to share with you a debate that occurred between Patrick Moore and Harvey Wasserman on Democracy Now, February 5th, 2009. Patrick Moore is a former member of Greenpeace, was actually a founder of the organization and was a leader within the organization for more than a decade. Harvey Wasserman is a longtime anti-nuclear activist and independent journalist. I heard this debate while on my way to work, and I wasn't terribly surprised that I've got a link to the debate, the video of the debate from another friend of mine who happens to be a fan of Democracy Now! And is a pro-nuclear activist who thought that this was a very interesting show. So I want to share it with you and intersperse some commentary along the way.
And this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman. As the Senate continues debate on President Obama's $900 billion economic stimulus plan, a coalition of environmental groups are calling on senators to remove a controversial provision that could lead to the construction of a new generation of nuclear power plants.
One of the things that I think that pro-nuclear activists need to do is to change the vocabulary. The people who are fighting against nuclear power plants are not just the environmentalists, and they're not all environmentalists. The organizations that fight against nuclear power is a very diverse coalition that includes folks that are very definitely in favor of continued burning of fossil fuels, other folks that are more interested in making money from installing windmills or selling wind turbines, like General Electric and Siemens, and are people who are very interested in slowing down the development of humans. So that's the coalition is not the environmentalists, it's the folks that are anti-nuclear, not necessarily the environmentalists. And yes, the provision will be controversial because the energy business is a huge business with lots of money involved, and there is always going to be controversy over giving a helping hand to a game-changing technology like nuclear fission power, because nuclear fission power could make all other energy sources obsolete. And by the way, that doesn't mean it would replace all energy sources. It would simply make them less profitable, less dominant, and less acceptable.
The Senate bill includes a proposed $50 billion in federal loan guarantees that would likely go to nuclear power and liquid coal technologies. The amount's just a fraction of what the nuclear power industry is seeking. Last year, the industry asked Congress for $122 billion in loan guarantees in order to build 21 new nuclear reactors. No nuclear plant has been built in the U.S. since the meltdown at Three Mile Island in 1979. Critics of the proposal question the safety of nuclear energy, doubt the federal loan guarantees would provide much of an immediate stimulus to the economy.
You know, the thing is that the stimulus to the economy argument is part of what's important right now. But the job-generating part of nuclear fission starts off with the activities necessary to build plants, the designing and licensing the plants, and training the people to be ready to construct. It continues with the construction phase, and the construction phase is a very labor-intensive operation, not just at the plant site itself, but at all the component manufacturing facilities. And then the real long-term benefit of investing in the capital asset of nuclear power comes with all of the jobs that get enabled when the power plants are up and running and providing clean, reliable, low-cost electricity for decades to come. but the stimulus does occur now and will continue on into the future. And this is more of a revival than just a stimulus.
But supporters of nuclear energy say nuclear should be considered a clean, safe, and emissions-free source of power. We're joined now by two guests to debate the issue. In the early 70s, they were both prominent members of the anti-nuclear movement. Today, they take opposing views on the future of nuclear energy. Harvey Wasserman is with us, an independent journalist, longtime anti-nuclear activist. In the early 70s, he helped found the grassroots movement against nuclear power in the U.S. and helped coin the phrase, no nuke.
And what a claim to fame that is. By the way, I have a bumper sticker on the back of my car that says no nukes as well, except mine is spelled K-N-O-W nukes.
He joins us from Ohio via DN Wood video stream. Patrick Moore is with us. He's co-founder and former leader of Greenpeace. He now serves as co-chair of the Pro-Nuclear Clean and Safe Energy Coalition, known as CASE. He's joining us from Boston. Let's start with you, Patrick Moore. Why do you support this provision in the stimulus plan?
Well, first, it's important to set the record straight on when the last nuclear plant was built. There were 47 nuclear plants commissioned in the 1980s. Three Mile Island was in 1979, so it's not as if Three Mile Island really marks the end of building nuclear in the States.
That's very true. The last new nuclear plant was commissioned in 1996 at Watts Bar, one of the Tennessee Valley Authority plants, and Tennessee Valley authorities also recently restored operation to Browns Ferry 1, which had been shut down for a couple of decades. There have been, as Patrick says, a large number of nuclear plants commissioned since Three Mile Island. It slowed the process. It added a lot of costs, but it did not stop the safe operation of new nuclear power plants in the U.S.
But nearly half the plants in the United States were built after Three Mile Island or commissioned after Three Mile Island. I support nuclear power simply because I think we all made a big mistake in the 1970s.
It's one of the reasons I admire Patrick Moore. It takes a big man to admit that he made a mistake and to not only admit that he made a mistake, but to take specific action to make up for that particular error. His activism for nuclear power is trying to make up for his anti-nuclear activism.
By confusing nuclear energy with nuclear weapons, Greenpeace started against U.S. hydrogen bomb testing in Alaska. We were all scared as young people back then, myself at the University of BC doing a PhD in ecology.
I like the way Patrick slid that in. He has a PhD in ecology, the actual study of the interaction of various contributors to an environment. Back in my day in the 1970s, ecology was the thing, not environmentalism.
That we were going to be wiped out by an all-out nuclear war. And we thought everything nuclear was evil. That would be as foolish as thinking that nuclear medicine was evil. Nuclear medicine is a very beneficial use of nuclear technology, and the medical isotopes that are dangerous otherwise are used to diagnose and cure many, many millions of people every year. Those medical isotopes are made in nuclear reactors in the same way that we can make electricity in nuclear reactors.
Unlike Patrick Moore, I don't think the isotopes are dangerous otherwise. Isotopes, like any other material, are only dangerous at a certain concentration level, and they can have good benefits and bad benefits. The dose makes the poison. I also believe that electricity is probably the most beneficial product that humans have ever invented or devised. It is an amazing enabler of human development and human comfort. So it is a tremendous use of fission technologies to create electricity.
And I don't think we should mix the destructive versus the beneficial uses of nuclear technology up in the way we did back then.
Harvey Wasserman, why are you opposed? Why do you want this out of the stimulus plan?
Well, there's no reason for the United States taxpayers to get stuck with another $50 billion tab for building new reactors that Wall Street won't fund.
The taxpayers are not being asked to fund new nuclear power plants. They're being asked to be the backers of the loans, just like they back loans for VA and FHA mortgages. It is a way to get the capital flowing to a place where there is a certain amount of risk for the investors, mainly because of the demonstrated history of opposition and government rule changes and things that slow down the process of construction. Every construction process contains a significant risk of default if it appears that there's going to be delays and potentially completed construction without allowing the capital asset to begin producing income. If you were building a large building and you had the possibility that at the end of construction you would not be able to get a permit to occupy the building, it would be very difficult to get a loan. That's the case of nuclear reactors, because the last few that were built in the U.S. had some problems. The Shoreham facility is one that is always remembered by the financial folks. That reactor cost $6 billion, and even after obtaining a federal license to operate, the local government decided to get involved and stop the approval of the evacuation plans. So the ratepayers in Long Island and other areas of New York are still paying for the cost of building a plant and then destroying it without letting it generate electricity.
Nuclear power has failed utterly in the marketplace, and it's back at the taxpayer trough trying to get more money. And this is a time when we actually need stimulus in our economy, and no nuclear plant that's funded now with taxpayer money could come online for at least a decade. It's a complete waste of money.
The stimulus, again, will occur as soon as the plants start being constructed. The jobs will be generated in the engineering, license application, the regulatory approval, training the construction workers, building the components for the plants, manufacturing them, and the jobs will be created. They will be created mainly here in America, but there will be stimulus being given in other places, but that's okay because those are our trading partners. They are also the people that buy treasury bonds to enable America to keep functioning. The fact that we're going to buy some pressure vessels from Japan is a good thing. It is going to be an important part of our continued participation in the world economy. Nuclear plants built here in the U.S., my guess is that the job-generating capability is in the tens of thousands of new jobs at high wages, and the opportunities for retraining from other manufacturing enterprises are tremendous.
It has no business being in the stimulus package, and people need to call their senators and congresspeople to stop this from happening.
Conversely, they need to call their senators and congresspeople and explain to them why approval of loan guarantee programs that include nuclear power plants is a good thing. It's a tremendous leveraged investment where the government steps up and becomes the backer, but private capital is the one that actually funds the plants and provides for the investments that need to be made.
It's a real perversion of the stimulus package, and the Senate may vote on this as early as this week, possibly next week, and we have a very difficult struggle to get rid of this $50 billion boondoggle going into the stimulus package. It has no business being there, and what's more, the reactors that would go under construction will be dangerous. They will be terror targets. We have had experience with atomic reactors causing cancer, leukemia, birth defects in the nearby neighborhoods where they've been built.
As my dear father would have said, horse hockey. Harvey's statement is complete and utter nonsense. The radiation dose levels at the boundaries of nuclear power plants are thousands of times less than the normal background radiation doses. There are well-documented studies that indicate that there's actually a health benefit from living and working in or near nuclear power plants. They are safe facilities. The radiation dose levels are very low, and they are probably in the range where hormesis, that is, health benefits from radiation, occur.
We have 50 years of experience with atomic power, and it's all been bad. So we have wind and solar and tidal and geothermal technologies that are ready to move ahead.
And human beings have known that there's energy in the wind, the sun, tides, and in geothermal for millennia. We've been using commercially wind and solar power for probably hundreds of years, and the amount of energy that we receive from those well-known sources is very low. There's a good reason for that. The energy is diffuse, it's unreliable, it's intermittent, it's weather-dependent, and it is a source where talented scientists and engineers over countless generations have looked around to find better ways. One of the things that they found was nuclear fission, and they found it just 50 or 60 years ago. We're still learning how to make better use of nuclear fission. We're still down at the low side of the typical S-curves of development. We have not yet hit the real growth spurts.
Along with the restoration of mass transit, any...
If you're a fan of mass transit, you need to be a fan of reliable electricity. Can you imagine what it's like to be in a subway, crowded subway, where the power goes out? I'm a submarine officer. I used to go to sea sealed inside small ships, but the idea of being sealed underground without electricity gives me claustrophobia.
Increasing efficiency in our economy. This is where our energy money needs to go, not to a failed 20th century technology.
Efficiency improvements are fine, but if you depend on efficiency improvements instead of building new power plants, you lock yourself into the same way you're generating power today, which is burning 1.2 billion tons of coal per year.
They cannot get private funding, and by the way, they cannot get private insurance. The United States government and the taxpayers are still on the hook for the financial impacts of any major catastrophic meltdown. The public was told in 1957 that soon private insurers would come forward and insure nuclear power plants against major disasters. That has not happened.
Once again, Harvey Wasserman is flat out lying. Here is an excerpt from a press release that was given when the Price-Anderson Act was last renewed. For the commercial nuclear power industry, the Price-Anderson Act provides a completely self-funding insurance framework totaling $9.5 billion. This industry insurance pool does not require a single penny of taxpayer money. In fact, since the law's inception, no federal funds have been used to reimburse commercial nuclear liability claims, and private insurers and nuclear utilities have paid all claims and costs to date. The nuclear industry is unique in that the entire industry takes financial responsibility for each of its members.
And to this day, the taxpayer is on the hook if we have a catastrophe by terror or error, and it seems to me that that needs to end.
Once again, the taxpayer on the hook only has the potential for starting after the industry has already paid out $9.5 billion, and the possibility of having an accident that causes that much damage is slimmer than none. There is no other industry in the world that has that kind of coverage for liability with that low a probability of ever needing it.
Patrick Moore.
Well, actually, Amy, there's 104 nuclear power plants operating clean and safely every day in the United States, more than any other country in the world. Nuclear energy provides 20% of U.S. electricity, and that amounts to nearly 75% of the clean energy now being produced in the United States.
And another 20% or so of the clean energy now produced in the United States comes from large hydroelectric facilities that were invested in during the last major financial catastrophe to occur in this country.
It is simply impossible to run the world on wind and solar energy. They are intermittent. They don't work when the wind stops blowing or the sun stops shining, and we need backup power, baseload power that's there 24/7. Unless we build nuclear plants, we've got to keep building coal plants.
There are some, of course, who say that with a little effort or a lot of effort and sacrifice, we could stop electric power demand from growing, and that would still consign us to burning 1.2 billion tons of coal per year if we just kept using the plants we have operating today. People like Amory Lovins and Harvey Wasserman and Arjun Makajani like to talk about conservation and avoiding the need to build new plants. But just think about how our society would work if people decided that we should conserve, say, microprocessors and never build any new microprocessor facilities. Electricity is a product. We ought to be producing it in clean, modern facilities, not in old, dirty 1950s technology coal plants.
And more gas plants, which are fossil fuels that release greenhouse gas and cause air pollution. The whole reason for the nuclear renaissance around the world is energy security and climate change and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions into the air.
That's a little oversimplification. It also has to do with the fact that nuclear heat is far cheaper than oil heat, coal heat, or gas heat, and the energy market is essentially a heat market. Right now, nuclear heat costs about 50 cents per million BTUs. Natural gas costs about $6 per million BTUs. Coal costs about $2 per million BTUs. And oil costs, even at today's prices, about $8 to $10 per million BTUs. So which would you rather pay? 50 cents? $2? $6? $8 to $10? I don't think it's a hard choice. It's an even easier choice when you know, like I and Kirk Sorensen and a few others, that we are currently producing nuclear fuel in a very inefficient manner that allows a tremendous amount of room for improvement, like conversion and breeding to make use of the 99.3% that we aren't using in uranium and the 100% that we are not using in thorium.
And Harvey and the rest of the people in my old organization of Greenpeace are stuck in the 1970s mentality. They have to come forward in time and think about what it is we can actually do. We're not going to run the country on tidal power, Harvey. It's just that's a pie in the sky, and so is a lot of the other stuff about running the country on wind and solar. They have their place in the scheme of things, but they cannot run the country. So how are we going to produce the thousands of megawatts of power we need every day, especially when we're going to start charging our cars, our batteries, and our plug-in hybrids, which doesn't make any sense to charge a plug-in hybrid on a coal-fired power plant or a gas plant. It makes a lot of sense to charge it on hydroelectric, nuclear, and wind when the wind is blowing. But
I'll say it again. I'm not a big fan of wind power, particularly large-scale industrial wind. I think that the turbines are a blight on the environment, that the developers walk away with all the money and leave a tremendously difficult to dispose of eyesore that will eventually stop functioning. And I just don't think that it's the best investment we can make, particularly since you have to buy three times as much as you really need in order to get reasonable reliability. Plus, you got to string thousands of miles of wire. When people talk about, well, we'll just use the wind from someplace else if our wind stops blowing, a lot of times on the East Coast, there's not a breath of air from Florida to Maine because we have something called the Bermuda High. That means you got to pump in power from thousands of miles away. Just don't get it. The only windmills I've ever seen that are reasonably functional are the windmills on the back of a sailboat that keep the batteries charged enough so that the lights stay on in the harbor, and that's about it. Oh, yeah, they're also reasonably effective at pumping up water for cattle in the middle of the Southwest Ranges or for pumping water to keep it out of the low-lying areas in the Netherlands.
You know, you got to have something for when it isn't, the two-thirds of the time when it isn't. Unfortunately, every time you build a wind farm, you have to build a gas plant to back it up.
All right, let's get Harvey Wasserman's response to Patrick Moore.
Well, Patrick, unfortunately, hasn't advanced much since he's signed up with the nuclear power industry. Nuclear power is a failed technology. We have $50 billion lined up in the Congress that needs to stop and not come out of the taxpayers' pocket because...
Harvey's right. The $50 billion should not come out of the taxpayer's pocket. The way to make sure that the $50 billion does not come out of the taxpayer's pocket is to enable the construction of the nuclear power plants so they can start up, operate, produce clean, reliable electricity, sell that to the public, and pay back their loans.
Among other things, the reactors that these $50 billion would fund cannot come online in less than a decade. We need the answers to our energy solutions now. It's nuclear power that's really pie in the sky. It's a failed technology. The first reactor went online in 1957 in Shippingport, Pennsylvania.
It's an interesting juxtaposition. Think about this. Harvey knows that the first reactor went online in 1957 in Shippingport, Pennsylvania, but he apparently does not realize that before September 6, 1954, the site where Shipping Port was built was a greenfield. That was the day that Eisenhower very publicly broke ground for the reactor plant. So it took 3 years to build. Using 1950s vintage construction techniques, 1950s vintage computers, i.e. slide rules, 1950s version drafting tools like paper, compasses, and triangles, that plant took 3 years to build. Why does it take us 10 years to build it today? Well, because of the obstructionist techniques of people like Harvey Wasserman, Arjun Makajani, Amory Lovins, and many, many others who would prefer to continue burning fossil fuels over allowing the construction and operation of clean, safe nuclear power plants.
And we have a half century of experience with this. The nuclear industry still cannot get private insurance against a major catastrophe. You do not have to take out insurance on a wind farm against an accident or a terror attack that will destroy an entire city. We need to build technologies that will come online, will bring us energy within a year or two, and that's wind, solar, tidal, geothermal, increased efficiency.
I just had a long conversation with a banker friend of mine who's heavily involved in some geothermal plants. He described to me just how difficult it is to drill for the deep geothermal, and how the probability of a payoff is far more uncertain than it is when you're drilling for oil and natural gas. Now, that's an interesting thing, because the payoff probability for oil and natural gas has never been particularly high. When you're drilling, you're not quite sure what's going to be under the ground and just how well the oil and gas are going to flow, and apparently it's even more uncertain to determine just how good the heat source is going to be at releasing its heat to make it useful on the surface. Of course, that's not really an issue for certain types of geothermal, like the ground source heat pumps that Patrick Moore likes, but ground source heat pumps are simply a more efficient way of using electricity. They are not a power source.
The plan is there. Take a look at Carbon-Free, Nuclear-Free by Arjun Makajani. There's plenty of other things, my own Solartopia book. We all have plans that
Harvey,
are very clear.
Harvey, Stephen Chu, President Obama's energy secretary, seems to agree with Patrick Moore. Among the things he said was, this is Stephen Chu, there is certainly a changing mood in the country because nuclear is carbon-free, that we should look at it with new eyes.
That's fine, but the fact is that we disagree with Stephen Chu on that, and you also have to pay for these reactors. The Seabrook nuclear plant, Shoreham, Three Mile Island itself, Diablo Canyon in California, these reactors came in at more than 500% over budget. The average construction cost for a new nuclear plant in the last century, in the 20th century, was twice as high as originally estimated. There are reactors now that are supposedly going to go under construction in Florida, whose price, estimated price, has tripled prior to even digging the first shovel at the construction site.
Patrick Moore, what are you going to do with the nuclear waste?
We're going to recycle it and use the 90% of the energy that's still in it. One of the great secrets that's been kept from the American people is that the used nuclear fuel, which does contain a small amount of waste that needs to be taken out of it before it can be recycled.
See, there's still lots of education left to do. Even strong supporters like Patrick Moore haven't yet heard the word that there are many uses for the materials in used nuclear fuel that are no longer fissionable. The fission products are rare materials with unique physical properties that could be used for many applications, and in some cases they would draw a tremendously high price per unit mass.
The used nuclear fuel that is now at all the reactors around the country is one of the most important future energy resources, which is domestic, for the United States. There's 20 times as much energy in that used fuel as was produced in the original cycle when it went through the first time. But let me answer Harvey's point.
Wait, on that issue of waste, I want to get Harvey Wasserman's response to that.
Oh, by the way, that's utter nonsense talking about pie-in-the-sky technology. The recycling of nuclear fuel has been a disaster in Britain, France, and Japan. It is not workable technology. It creates much more toxic nuclear waste than was originally dealt with, and it's not economic. We have experience with attempting to reprocess nuclear fuel, and it has failed. That's why the $50 billion in this stimulus package has got to come out.
And that's one of the reasons I left. One of the reasons I left Greenpeace is because people like Harvey spread this misinformation. The French are fueling 22 of their 59 nuclear reactors on recycled fuel. Just go to Cap La Hague. They've got a huge facility there. Japan has also built a $30 billion facility to fabricate and recycle fuel. But on the point of taxpayers, every other country but the United States has state-owned electrical utilities. Canada, France, Britain, you name it. The government takes 100% of the risk on electric utilities because they are perceived as a monopoly and a national security issue.
They're also rightly understood as a vital part of our shared infrastructure. We all want access to clean, safe, reliable electricity, and the competitive marketplace just doesn't seem to be the right way to get it with the lowest possible cost, because utilities are natural monopolies where there is dominant suppliers who can make decisions that are not necessarily in the favor of the customer, and they can't be held or kept honest by competition because they have erected the barriers to entry to the point where it is almost impossible to bring in a generator that has the same marginal costs as a large nuclear power plant. Of course, I have an option for that in terms of small nuclear power plants, but haven't yet got to the marketplace yet. All right, back to the show.
In most countries, the United States is the only place where private capital is expected to pay for electricity infrastructure, and the only reason wind and solar are being built is because of mandates and extremely high costs being paid to these technologies. It's political. If there was no subsidy for wind and solar, there'd hardly be any wind and solar.
And that's not hard to prove. Take a look at the construction history in the U.S. Every time the production tax credit goes away, construction goes away completely. And that's with mandates for renewable energy portfolio standards. The wind and solar industry are heavily subsidized, and they are not small companies. They're companies like British Petroleum and General Electric and Siemens who are getting most of the benefit from these enormous tax breaks.
People would be building baseload power like nuclear and fossil fuels, but you know, I'm not in favor of continuing to build coal plants. I think 50% is enough. That's how much electricity in the U.S. comes from coal. And again, it doesn't make sense to charge a plug-in hybrid or run a ground source heat pump on a coal-fired power plant. It just puts the pollution somewhere else.
Harvey Wasserman.
It does make sense to run them on wind farms. And Patrick, who is Canadian, makes a good, and will not be paying, by the way, for the $50 billion bailout that the nuclear industry wants in advance here. And by the way, the Congressional Budget Office has warned that 50% of the utilities that build nuclear plants will go bankrupt. And Patrick has pointed out, you know, that the nuclear utilities in Europe are all government-owned. All this hype about the French reactors putting out so much energy obscures the fact that these are owned by the government. It is a national socialist form of electric generation. We don't want that in the United States.
Another piece that Harvey doesn't seem to understand is that France not only supplies 80% of its own power, actually it's more like 88% of its own power, it also exports the equivalent of about 8 of its reactor plants to its neighbors, because those markets like buying the cheap electricity that the French nuclear power plants provide. The French government has not got a tremendously good record at running a completely functioning economy, but it's a nice place to live. The people have plenty of clean air to breathe. They have access to reliable electricity, and the plants are competently run by a group of folks where they get respect for being government employees with strong technical backgrounds. That's not necessarily the case here in the U.S., but maybe it will be in the future. I'm not opposed to government capably running nuclear power plants. Heck, I've been part of a government organization that capably runs nuclear power plants for about 30 years. However, I do see the value in private capital, and I do see that the U.S. has a slightly different situation than France and has competent private companies that can own and operate nuclear power plants. But the fact of the matter is that our companies right now need some backing in order to get the capital moving. I don't think they need a handout. They need a hand up.
And by the way, don't go anywhere near the La Hague reprocessing facility.
No, Harvey, if you go near the La Hague reprocessing facility, you might actually learn something. So please stay away.
Every country in Europe has asked France to shut down this reprocessing facility because it's such a major polluter. It has put huge quantities of radioactive waste into the water bodies around it, and every other country in Europe is asking that this reprocessing facility at La Hague be shut down. The same with Sellafield in England, and the Japanese plant also, the reprocessing plant, has tremendous problems. Reprocessing nuclear fuel is pie in the sky. We don't want this $50 billion rider stuck into the stimulus bill. People need to call their senators and congresspeople and get it out. Patrick, you pay taxes in Canada. You want to pay for it up there, that's your issue. But don't tell us here in the United States that we got to pay another $50 billion for a failed 20th century technology.
Patrick Moore, your response, on the French plant that you just recommended.
Well, first off, that's total misinformation that other countries are asking France to turn it off. It's just completely ridiculous. Most of the countries in Europe depend on nuclear energy for their electricity. Slovakia, 60%. Belgium, 65%. It's the only way to get the energy out of the used fuel, Harvey, and people are doing it around the world. The United States is 30 years behind.
At huge cost.
The best study I can find so far indicates that the additional cost of recycling used nuclear fuel is about 1.3 mils per kilowatt hour. That's 0.13 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, considering the fact that direct disposal costs about 1 mil per kilowatt hour, the additional cost of 1.3 mils per kilowatt hour sounds like a large percentage increase. However, it's a decimal dust issue with regard to the total price of electricity.
It's extremely expensive. It doesn't work. We have a $50 billion boondoggle coming down the line here. It's got to get out of this stimulus package.
Do you think that if it was too expensive, the French would have 80% of their electricity coming from nuclear?
Yes, because it doesn't work in the marketplace. The French industry is national socialism. It's owned by the government. There is not the private money in the French industry is minuscule. The French reactors cannot compete in the marketplace.
We're going to have to leave it there. We started with Patrick Moore, so we ended with Harvey Wasserman, and I want to thank you both for being with us.
One challenge that Democracy Now! Has is it's a traditional radio/television show that has a very strict time deadline. So Amy Goodman had to cut off Patrick Moore when he was coming back with a pretty good rebuttal to Harvey Wasserman. His question was, since when is Harvey Wasserman such a defender of the free market? It's interesting that many people on the left and far left are continuing to point to the fact that nuclear power plants may need some government assistance in order to get constructed, and they claim that that's a huge disadvantage. But they have no problem advocating for government assistance for many, many other activities that have widespread benefits to all the rest of us. My belief is that there are places where the government needs to get involved. The government, after all, is all of us. We need to sometimes make shared decisions and make shared investments, because no one, no individual, with the exception of maybe Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, can afford to build large capital assets that have long lives and wait for the return on the investment. But together, we can build tremendous assets. And when you think about the scale of the financial bailouts and the amazing amount of money that's being generated to flow back and forth, I think it would be a tremendous investment to put some of that money to work in building capital assets that can produce a useful product for many years and provide something for our future generations rather than just consuming all of the valuable hydrocarbons that the natural processes on the earth took millions of years to accumulate. It's pretty darn selfish of us to burn them all up just because we're here and our offspring are not yet here. Anyway, I hope that you enjoyed this discussion, debate, and it's time to move on and let you get on to something else, like calling your congressman and your senator and saying, we think that providing some capital backing to loans to the nuclear power industry is a good investment. It's worthwhile, and it will certainly put a lot of good, hardworking people to work, and it will enable and will encourage folks who have been perhaps laid off from industries like the automobile industry to get retrained so they can become tremendously valuable owners and operators of the next generation of new nuclear power plants. Also, if you have some time, go visit tpn.thepodcastnetwork.com/pledge and make a little gift. Allow the bandwidth to keep flowing, the servers to keep operating, and all of the support that's given to the Atomic Show to keep coming. All that money doesn't, I don't need any of that money. I've got a good job. You guys are already paying my salary, so I thank you for that. So take care. Go green. Go Atomic.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adams way.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.